This is one in a series of podcasts produced by the Department of Classics at the University of Cincinnati. In these podcasts, you'll be hearing departmental faculty and graduate students discussing aspects of ancient Greek and Roman culture relating to the city of Pompeii and its lasting legacy.
Joining us today is Allison Emerson of the University of Cincinnati, whose area of specialty is the tombs of Pompeii. Allison, tell me, what drew you to the study of tombs?
Well, it might seem strange or morbid, but tombs are actually an excellent way to study the lives of ancient Pompeians. Individuals often built tombs before they died, and they carefully chose each aspect of their tombs to send certain messages about who they were and what sort of lives they'd led. The tombs of Pompeii give us a very intimate look at everyday Romans that we don't get from many other sources.
What sorts of messages would a person send through their tombs?
At Pompeii, they often fall into one of two types. Many tombs emphasized a person's status and importance to the community by advertising their political careers and the public offices that they'd achieved. This could be done either through the text of a person's epitaph or by images showing symbols of office that could be painted or carved on the tomb. Other tombs stress the importance of family connections, with epitaphs describing the relationships of all the people buried inside or around a particular tomb. The relationships could also be shown through portraits included on the tomb, which demonstrated that the people buried there continued to be united, even after death. Some tombs combine the two approaches, including messages about public office and family.
If tombs are sending messages, don't they need a viewer? Who are the dead talking to through their tombs?
That's a good question. A primary difference between Roman tombs and modern tombs is where they're placed. Today, tombs are set aside in cemeteries, which are in many ways distinct spaces separated from the living. We might visit them occasionally, but they aren't a part of our daily lives. This wasn't the case in the Roman world. Romans were very concerned with perpetuating their memories after death, and they wanted as many people as possible to see their tombs. According to Roman law, tombs had to be located outside the city, and so they tend to cluster along the busiest highways outside the city walls. At Pompeii, tombs surround the city gates, which were areas of heavy traffic. Anyone coming to or going from Pompeii would have seen and interacted with the tombs. They were very much a part of daily life. Some tombs at Pompeii are even shaped like benches, inviting people to sit, rest, and maybe even reflect on the life of the deceased. Graffiti found on tombs and trash found dumped in and around them also show that they were just another part of everyday life.
Aren't trash and graffiti awfully disrespectful? Didn't the Pompeians have respect for the dead?
Litter and graffiti are very disrespectful in a modern context, but we have to remember that attitudes to such things don't always stay the same through time. In the Roman period, tombs were considered sacred spaces, and they were legally protected from harm. It doesn't seem that the Romans considered either garbage or graffiti to be harmful to a tomb, and their presence was accepted, at least to some degree.
What did the tombs look like? You mentioned ones like benches. What else was there?
Oh, there's a huge variety. Pompeii's tombs are highly varied. We have to remember that individuals wanted their tombs to attract attention. In addition to the bench tombs, some tombs look like the altars used to make offerings to the gods. Some look like temples with colonnades placed on high podia. Some imitated the honorific arches that were popular in Roman towns. And many simply consisted of four walls, open to the sky, with burials placed inside. Some tombs had rooms inside of them, and the remains of the dead were either placed in niches in the walls or buried in the floor. In other cases, burials were made in the ground surrounding a tomb.
You said that remains could be placed in the niches in the walls. Were coffins used?
No, not usually. The most common funerary rite at Pompeii was cremation, particularly for adults. The deceased was burned on a pyre, along with offerings of pottery, oils, and food. The remains and other offerings were gathered up and placed in an urn, which was set inside the niche. Alternately, the urn might be buried in the ground. In this case, it was often placed in a lead container to protect it. Terracotta or lead tubes were put in place that led from the ground to the urn, through which the relatives of the deceased could pour liquid offerings of oil, perfume, or wine.
Were these offerings made at the funeral?
Yes, but they were also made regularly after the funeral. Roman literary evidence suggests that meals were eaten at the tomb on certain days of the year, such as on the birthday of the deceased, and during public festivals honoring the ancestors. At these times, offerings would have been made to the dead. At Pompeii, two tombs include permanent triclinia, or dining couches, for this type of funerary banquet.
It sounds like there were usually several people buried in a tomb. Is that correct?
Burial at Pompeii was typically for groups. Epitaphs usually included husbands and wives, as well as their freedmen and freedwomen, that is, their former slaves. Slaves who were never freed also seem to have been buried in the tombs of their owners. It's a different sort of family than we might think of today. Children usually weren't included in the dedication, maybe because they were expected to build their own tombs. Likewise, few tombs were set up by children to parents, since so many people built their own tombs while they were still living.
It seems strange that slaves and former slaves are more common than children in the tombs.
It definitely does, from a modern perspective. In the Roman world, slaves were legally considered a part of the family. Their master was responsible for taking care of them, which included giving them a proper burial. Of course, we shouldn't take this to mean that slaves weren't mistreated. Legally, they were not considered to be people, and they had almost no legal rights to prevent them from being abused. In the tombs at Pompeii, however, we do see instances that suggest true bonds of affection between masters and their slaves or former slaves, such as when a master marries his freed slave.
Were tombs only built by rich people? Where was everyone else buried?
The large monumental tombs outside the city gates would require a certain amount of capital to build. They couldn't have been cheap. We do see some variety in the class of people who built them, though. Many belonged to members of the elite, but others were built by freeborn individuals who seemed to have had humbler origins, and a great many were built by freedmen. Freedmen often included spaces for their own freedmen and slaves in their tombs, suggesting that these former slaves had gained some degree of wealth by the time of their deaths. Pompeii's poorest residents, those who weren't slaves that would be buried in the tombs of their masters, probably didn't have permanent funerary markers. In an area just outside the city wall on the north side of Pompeii, many urns were found buried in the ground. In the same area, names had been scratched into the city wall. These were perhaps the memorials of Pompeii's poor, who couldn't afford any sort of marker. Those with slightly more resources might have been buried in open areas, with their remains marked by small gravestones.
What do the gravestones look like? Do they feature epitaphs?
Pompeii's gravestones are very distinct. They look like stylized human busts, with rectangular torsos and round heads above. Some have hairstyles modeled in the back, although the front is almost always flat and featureless. The name of the deceased was carved or painted on the front, sometimes with some other information like the age of death. The stones were usually set into the ground, and often stabilized with a wooden or metal post stuck through a hole in the bottom. This type of gravestone, which is called a columella, is found almost exclusively at Pompeii and a few neighboring cities in the southern Bay of Naples. Columellae stand in groups in the open areas I mentioned earlier, but also mark individual burials around monumental tombs and are even found inside tomb chambers. Because they look like people and each one marks the burial of one person, they're thought to represent the deceased, or his or her spirit.
What was the Roman idea about the afterlife?
There was no clearly defined afterlife in official Roman religion. There were some foreign cults that were popular with the Romans that promised good afterlives to followers, but these were not a part of the official Roman system. We can get some idea about Pompeians' afterlife beliefs from their tombs, though. Often, burials made in the ground featured a tube that ran between the surface and the urn, so the family of the deceased could give liquid offerings. Food offerings were also made at the tomb. The meals eaten at the tombs were understood to be family banquets, attended by both the living and the deceased. It seems clear that there was some concept of the dead, or their spirits, living on in some way at the tomb.
Did women ever build tombs at Pompeii?
Yes, many tombs were built by women. In fact, the largest tomb at Pompeii was built by a woman named Eumachia, who also constructed a building in the Forum in the early 1st century BC. In a slightly puzzling example, a married couple had two tombs. One was built by the husband on the southern side of the city, and another by his wife on the northern side. Because the wife's tomb is more ornate than the husband's, many people believe that she thought her husband's tomb wasn't showy enough, and decided to build herself something nicer. It's also possible that the couple chose together to represent themselves on both sides of the city, the better to perpetuate their memory. Columellae of the husband and several of the family's slaves and freedmen have been found in his tomb, while only those of slaves and freedmen have been found in the wife's. Her columella has not been found.
How interesting. Can we find any other stories of Pompeian life in Pompeii's tombs?
Oh, there are more than I have time to talk about. One tomb was built by a freedman, Publius Vasonius Phaleros, for himself, his former owner, Vasonia, and his friend, Marcus Orfelius Faustus. This is the only example of a tomb from Pompeii that specifically includes an individual who was not a member of the owner's family. Unfortunately, the friendship went bad sometime after the tomb was constructed. A second inscription was then added under the original epitaph. It informs the viewer that Publius and Marcus had become involved in a legal dispute, and that Marcus unjustly made claims against Publius. Publius was acquitted, but it doesn't seem to have repaired the relationship, and the added inscription forbids Marcus's burial within the tomb. Columellae for Publius and Vasonia were uncovered here, but the prohibition against Marcus seems to have lasted, and his columella has never been found.
Wow, I see what you mean about tombs providing evidence for Pompeian lives.
Yeah, it's a testimony to personal lives and relationships that we couldn't reconstruct through any other source.
On that note, I think we should wrap up. Thanks very much for telling us all about tombs at Pompeii, Allison.
Thank you very much for having me.
This concludes the podcast, but you can find others in this series at our website, classics.uc.edu/outreach, and on the UC Classics Outreach Facebook page, facebook.com/uc.classics.outreach. To learn more about our outreach program of public lectures, email outreach@classics.uc.edu. To learn more about the exhibit, A Day in Pompeii, at the Cincinnati Museum Center from March 2nd to August 12th, 2012. Go to cincinnatimuseum.org/Pompeii.